sometimes a phrase comes up in my mind and I spend time with it for a while. And the phrase acceptance is another word for reality. It's been a phrase that I've been spending time with. So I thought it would be a good thing to explore. Acceptance is another word for reality. And I think this word acceptance, the whole idea of acceptance, brings up quite a bit of confusion for people. I think we often associate it with passivity. But I think of acceptance, from my experience of acceptance, is that it is energizing, it's joyful, it's creative, and it's sometimes extremely active. Acceptance doesn't mean doing nothing. It's more around seeing reality as it is and then responding appropriately. So as I was thinking about that, I came across Reb's introduction to his book, The Third Turning of the Wheel, and I'll read out just the opening paragraph of chapter one. A Buddha is someone who sees the way things are. When we see the way things really are, we see that we're all in this together, that we are all interdependent. A great surpassing love arises from that wisdom, and that love leads Buddha to wish that all beings would open to this wisdom and be free of the misery that arises from ignoring the way things are. Buddhas appear in the world because they want us to have Buddha's wisdom, so that we will love every single being completely and protect every single being without exception and without limit, just as all the Buddhas do. So it's interesting that he talks about seeing things the way they really are. Reality. Reality. And I've partly been thinking about acceptance because, as some of you know, I lost my house in the fires in Australia, the only piece of property that I have. But the land is still there. So I didn't really want to talk about that particularly tonight, but I did want to mention that if anyone is interested, I'm giving a talk about the Australian fires and my experience of being there at the Grange in Live Oak on Thursday the 26th of this month at 7 p.m, so you're welcome to come. It's being organised by Santa Cruz Climate Action Network. But in thinking about how I responded to that experience, there were a number of different teachings that have been very helpful. And so I thought I would take a number of different koans and pull out an aspect of that case that has an element in it that might be helpful for us in understanding what true acceptance is and how we can have work with acceptance as a creative force in our lives. So the first one is a very well-known case. I think I've spoken about it up here before. Pai Cheng's fox in the Mumonkong case number 2. Just the first part of the case I'd like to read out. Once when Pai Cheng gave a series of talks, a certain old man was always there listening together with the monks. When they left, he would leave too. One day, however, he remained behind. Pai Cheng asked him, "Who are you standing here before me?" The old man replied, "I am not a human being. In the far distant past, in the time of Kasyapa Buddha, I was head priest at this mountain. One day a monk asked me, 'Does an enlightened person fall under the laws of cause and effect or not?' I replied, 'Such a person does not fall under the laws of cause and effect. With this, I was reborn 500 times as a fox. Please say a turning word for me and release me from the body of the fox. He then asked Pai Cheng, does an enlightened person fall under the laws of cause and effect or not? Pai Cheng said, such a person does not evade the laws of cause and effect. And there's a comment, I think it's very instructive, it goes like this. Not falling under the laws of cause and effect, why should this prompt 500 lives as a fox? Not evading the laws of cause and effect, why should this prompt a return to human life? If you have the single eye of realization, you will appreciate how old Pai Cheng lived 500 lives as a fox, as lives of grace. Often when we think about cause and effect, we do think of it in terms of whether we fall under it or whether we are subject to it, a little bit as if it is a burden. But I often think about, particularly when I really spent time with this 500 years as the fox's lives of grace, how just amazing it is that cause and effect is. That because this interacts with that and causes a change to occur, we get to be alive. You know, if our lungs weren't able to flex as the air came in, and they're not able to contract as the air came out, we wouldn't be alive. The cause and effect is miraculously beautiful. It's just miraculously beautiful. And its consequences are sometimes painful, and its consequences are sometimes neutral, and its consequences are life-affirming and all-pervading. So contemplating cause and effect, I think, can really help us with acceptance. So, for example, with my house, losing my house in the fire, I was able to just think logically about the causes and conditions that resulted in it being burned down, without there having to be any kind of emotion involved. So you can start anywhere in the spot along cause and effect, because it goes in all directions. We can't really track it. It's not a linear thing. There's so much interpenetration of different causes and conditions. But nevertheless, we can just roughly look at it. So I was able to think, yeah, I built this house in a forest. And at the time that I built it, the forest had lots of mist and moisture, and the river was high. Sometimes we even got a little bit of snow, and we would have frost for many months. You know, bits of frost in the morning, there was moisture. So we built a house that wasn't fireproof because it didn't seem to be necessary. And we built it out of wood. But over the last 30 years, with logging in the area and clearing of forests across the whole country and climate change, those particular forests where my house was built had become drier and drier and drier. And in the last 5 years, virtually no rain had fallen, maybe tiny little bits, but no substantial rain in 5 years. So, as a lot of you know about eucalypts, they're very flammable. My house was in this forest of eucalypts. So, it burned down. Because huge fires came, and I wasn't there to stop it. I couldn't get there, and even if I could have got there, I didn't have fire equipment. And my neighbours on the cooperative property, my neighbours were busy protecting their houses, because of course it's exactly the right thing for them to do. So there was nobody to do anything, and so it burned down. And just contemplating that can make it, just makes it make sense. And if it makes sense, everything makes sense, by the way. Everything makes sense, we just don't always know how it makes sense. But it all makes sense. We can totally trust in that. That's the radical faith in cause and effect. Everything makes sense. And when we realize that absolutely everything makes sense, it helps us to be more accepting. So it's accepting as in just pausing and going, oh, okay, I see, that's what's happening right now. Acceptance doesn't mean, as I might mention a little bit further on, it doesn't mean not doing anything. It doesn't mean accepting things and then doing nothing. but it does mean going, ah, this makes sense, this makes sense. Even if this makes sense, I don't know how it makes sense, but apparently it does. Even if that's the best we can do that. The teachings of cause and effect, we could say they fit into the first turning of the Dharma wheel, teachings on interdependence, the Four Noble Truths, the 12 links of dependent origination, cause and effect. They're examining how the apparent world functions, how this world of appearance, how this world of different appearances, you and I and all the different objects, how they function in the world. So becoming very comfortable with and familiar with the workings of the world of appearances can help us to be accepting. And that accepting may be accepting that we can do nothing about it, and therefore just relax and breathe and don't expend any more energy on that, or accepting that there is something that it would be good to do about it, and therefore I have to accept that I have to make an effort and do something, even if I don't want to. It might be appropriate to apply some effort and do something, and that the acceptance then is in that. The acceptance is going, this isn't okay what's happening, I have the capacity to do something about that, I've taken the Bodhisattva vow to do something about that, so I accept, I have to take a deep breath and do something about it. Another word for reality, which I know doesn't actually make logical sense, but I'm really enjoying, really just seeing that reality, acceptance is another word for reality, which is different to acceptance of reality is a good idea, or acceptance is part of reality. It's different, but acceptance is another word for reality. Something about that I'm liking. So another case 43 in the Blue Cliff Record, Kungshan's No Cold or Heat. This is a koan that we've been working with recently in the Friday koan group. We meet at 1 o'clock on Fridays here. Case 43, Kungshan's No Cold or Heat. A monk asked Kungshan, when cold and heat come, how can we avoid them? Shan said, why don't you go to the place where there is no cold or heat? The monk said, what is the place where there is no cold or heat? Tung Shan said, when it's cold, the cold kills you. When it's hot, the heat kills you. Well, sometimes another way, the way I tend to say it in my head is, when it's cold, let the cold kill you. When it's hot, let the heat kill you. So this kind of killing that we're talking about here could be, one way you could see this is when we're completely present to reality, totally attentive to what's arising in front of us, we can kind of disappear. We can kind of disappear. And the sort of ego attachment to it's an ego identity, identification with the individual self, that identification with the individual self, it can just away. And you're just, the present moment's killing you. I think that's the spirit of this. And sometimes things are very difficult. You could say they're very hot in that regard. Even when things are very hot, we can just open to it. Open to the reality of that difficult thing, and with that sense of losing ourselves and therefore unifying with everything and everything, everyone and everything that's in that space, unifying with it, we dissolve And then we're going to respond more appropriately because, in fact, we don't exist as a separate entity. It is only an appearance. So we'll actually be functioning more in accord with reality when we forget about ourselves in that identified type of a way. We don't forget about ourselves in the sense of we need to drink water, we need to go to the bathroom, we need to open a window, put a sweater on. Not that kind of forgetting. That's the appropriate care of our appearance, of ourselves as a causal stream. But the identification with the self, we can just let it drift away and let reality just wash it out of us. That's the kind of feeling here. And an example of that was that I'd like to share is the other night I was at a meeting. As some of you also know, I'm very active in Extinction Rebellion. And we did a big action last week trying to encourage Chase Bank to stop funding fossil fuel expansion. And we were having a debriefing meeting. And there was about 20 people, and they were very animated. It was an excellent action, went very well, very creative and well-received and so on. So people had a lot of exciting energy. And first we were talking about all that went really well, and then we talked about ways we'd like to improve things. And then halfway through the meeting, the facilitator said, okay, and now we're going to shift into what we're going to do for the next action. And then someone just put their hand up and very gently said, we're going too fast. And I saw how the facilitator was able to assess in that moment that this person, there were three people in the meeting who had been arrested. So their experience of that action had been very different to the rest of us who'd had a very kind of joyful, playful, this was the disobedience action you may have heard of. We'd had a different experience to three people in the room who'd had something much more difficult. They'd voluntarily relinquished their freedom and been handcuffed and taken away for the sake of all the plants and animals and people of the world. So the facilitator in that moment was able to die to that reality and die to their preference, which was to get on to how to plan the next action. And instead they said, oh, hold on, I think we need to give time to these three people. And what happened is those three people just shared the most moving stories of what it was like for them to be arrested. And they were weeping. And we sort of, other people, tears were falling. And it had the effect of all of us dropping into a more quiet place and realizing how profound it was that we were all there in that room together and that we had been doing this work together and that we cared about the world. And it was a far more productive way to use our time than had we actually gone on and planned the next action. So we didn't get to do that. Instead, we got to just be with each other and really feel the depth of what we were all doing. No, luckily they were released. They went down to the jail and then they were released, yeah. But I think the experience for them of having handcuffs and being put in the back of a paddy wagon and then being put into a jail cell and just having no freedom, like they just lost all their freedom, it was hard. So that's an example of the facilitator of that meeting let go of their preference, kind of died to that moment because they were able to meet reality. They could see something. They didn't have in their head, no, but we've got this other plan. And we're not able to see the needs of people. They were able to be present to that reality, see what was actually going on. They were in accord with that reality in front of them, and they accepted it. And it resulted in this wonderful creativity. That acceptance resulted in creativity. It wasn't passive. It might have looked passive to someone. They might have thought something. like the facilitator should have just kept with the agenda or something. I don't know, but I don't think anyone thought anything like that. And clearly it was a creative way of being in acceptance with what was arising. And sort of seeing if we can track this to the turning of the Dharma wheel, maybe we could see this as the second turning of the Dharma wheel, which is the emptiness teaching. And that the facilitator in that moment lost their sense of separation, unified with the whole field that was in front of them, and responded accordingly. The sense of separation and difference dissolved. Another case, case 29 of the Blue Cliff Record. Thai Sui's It Goes Along With It. And Kokyo mentioned this case a few weeks ago. A monk asked Thai Sui, "The conflagration at the end of the eon sweeps through and the universe is totally destroyed. I wonder, is this one destroyed or not?" Sui said, "It is destroyed." The monk said, "If so, then this goes along with it." And Sui said, "It goes along with it." So there's a small point here that I want to make, and then there's another different point I want to make. So in here there is a question about whether everything is included. If that is destroyed, is this destroyed too? Yes, there's no exception. So for us, in talking about acceptance, we could be tempted to say, all right, I'm willing to practice with acceptance of this, this, and this, but there's something I don't want to accept, and instead of accepting it, I'm going to come up with a simplistic explanation to make sense of it, which is something, could be something like, they're just stupid. That'd be the kind of thing. Something like that. People come up with any sort of simplistic explanation for the infinitely complex reality is probably somebody not being in acceptance and then wanting to come up with a shortcut way to explain it, to explain their resistance to it. But the point that I was wanting to make is further on in the case. It goes like this. Later there was a monk who asked Master of the Mountain Sui, "The conflagration at the end of the eon sweeps through and the universe is totally destroyed. I wonder, is this one destroyed or not?" The Master of the Mountain said, "It's not destroyed." When we have teachings, the third turning of the Dharma wheel teachings on Buddha nature, or sometimes called ultimate truth. It has different names. Some people maybe call it God. I've been enjoying calling it this present moment. And I've been thinking about how this present moment, no matter what you do to it, you can't destroy it. You can't bomb it. You can't put it in a cage. You can't ignore it. You can't shrink it. You can't expand it. This present moment is always present everywhere, and always has been and always will be, and there's not a single thing that we can do to alter that. And on one level, that's completely self-evident. But I think sometimes we can contemplate something like this and see how, and really feel how profound and powerful it is that this present moment cannot be destroyed. I sometimes think about this when I think of something terrible happening to me, or to someone I love, I say to myself, well, whatever happens, this present moment will not be destroyed. And whatever happens, it will be happening in this present moment. And it somehow, I find it very, very encouraging. That sounds like too trivial a word to use for it. It's very powerful to know that I experience this present moment and it cannot be destroyed. So if something terrible happens to you, you can, if you've got no other recourse to any other thought, you could at least have the thought, nobody can take away this present moment. In any place of the whole universe, nobody can take it away. It is all pervading, all the time, not subject to causes and conditions, not affected by anything. And maybe you might find that helpful if you spend some time with it. I think it feels a little more warm if we use words like true nature or Buddha nature can never be destroyed. It's got more of a warmth to it. No matter what you might do to me, my true nature can never be destroyed. No matter what happens to me, my true nature can never be destroyed. No matter what happens to the earth, its nature cannot be destroyed. Because this true nature just penetrates through absolutely everything. It arises and appears in a single thing, but it penetrates everything. So that might also be a helpful way in thinking about acceptance. I think actually, thinking about climate change is one place where this thought that this present moment cannot be destroyed, I find very helpful. Because otherwise I could kind of go too far down the rabbit hole of what specific thing am I hoping will survive or not survive the changes that are ahead, and I could get too caught up in all of that. So I can spend a bit of time thinking about that, but then I can just broaden out into this cannot be destroyed. So I don't need to worry too much. I just do what I can do with, you know, fulfilling my vow. Like the way Richard and I sit at the clock tower. Just such a sweet little thing that we do. We do it for half an hour on Friday. Is that going to save some squirrels? We don't know. We don't need to worry about it. So, one last thought. I wanted to make sure there's a little bit of time for comments or questions. There are some things you could call near enemies of acceptance. So there are things that look like acceptance. I find this concept of near enemies very, very useful. So I just sort of thought about some. These didn't come from anywhere in particular, just from my own experience. That some near enemies of acceptance could be defeatism, depression, cynicism. So those three, I thought together, all have in common that there's a strong identification with the self, the individual self, and too much certainty about what's going on. We should never be certain about anything when it comes to the world of appearances. Way too complex for us to be certain about anything. So defeatism is you're too sure that it's just all over. And depression is you're too sure that there's nothing you can do about it. And cynicism, it's kind of like a bit of an angry dismissiveness. So in all of those there's ego identification and a sense of certainty. And then another couple that I thought of is just not caring, which could look a bit like acceptance, but if you actually don't care, like our acceptance should always stem from love. We're accepting that we can do something, or we're accepting that we can't do something. And in all instances, we should be thinking about all of this in terms of relieving suffering in the world. but someone who just doesn't care, it could look like they're being in acceptance, but they're just not caring. So the difficult, the reason that that's not true creative acceptance is because in that not caring, besides it lacking compassion, it is a subtle form of aversion. It doesn't look like aversion, but it's aversion. And then another possibility of something that could look like acceptance but isn't, is complying out of a sort of unwarranted fear. Sometimes we need to comply because that's just the safest thing to do. But that then would be actual creative acceptance. Like if you have handcuffs on, it's probably not a good idea to struggle or you'll get bruises. That's not just complying out of unwarranted fear, that's appropriate to not struggle. But often people do comply because they have fear for some aspect of identification with an ego self, and it's unwarranted, and therefore it's not good for that person and maybe not good for other people. So they're just some examples of things that look like acceptance but are not really a life-affirming acceptance. So I think that might be enough. Does anyone have anything they'd like to comment or ask about the teacher? Yeah. Into denial, yes. Yes. Yeah, that's a form of aversion, really, isn't it? That to be in denial. Yeah. And maybe people will go into denial because they're scared to act. They don't know how to act. And so they take that step to say, I don't think it's as bad as you say. Something like that. So we can be compassionate and accepting that people use denial because they are not able to do better than that. And we should always do that. We should always be accepting of whatever is happening. We have to be accepting of whatever is happening and then work out whether our acceptance requires action from us or whether it requires letting it be. And sometimes it requires letting it be for now and then we do action later when we come up with an idea or conditions become favorable for an action to happen later. The coronavirus? Yeah, so I think we want to just see reality as it is. So therefore, in this case, educate ourselves enough to know what's good behavior. So, you know, the things that people have been saying, washing your hands frequently, being aware at night, not shaking hands with people, you know, all those things that we've read about. We don't need to do more than that, really. We don't need to worry. Like the worrying, unless the worrying is a productive worry that comes up with a solution. The way I think of worry is if we worry a little bit and then come up with a good idea, then that was useful. We were, maybe better than saying worrying, is that we were reflecting on reality, we were reflecting on what was arising, and we come up with a good idea. But if we just worry, like, oh my God, but what if it happens to me? What if it happens to my kid? What if it happens to my... If we just keep doing that, especially sentences in our head that begin with what if are usually sort of like a red flag. That's probably unproductive, and in a subtle way, that is taking us, well, not even a subtle way, that is taking us away from what's in front of us. that's not actually good for us in terms of understanding reality, and actually wouldn't be good for us in working out how to respond to this coronavirus, because we'd be preoccupied with fantasies about what if it happens here or what if it happens there. What, you know, there is room for productive reflection on, if I get sick and I can't go to work, will I be able to pay my rent? I mean, there's definitely things that are appropriate to think about, but not in a just repetitive, emotionally driven way. Just in a practical way. And that takes some mental discipline. That's why we do Zazen. It helps develop mental discipline for life's vagaries. Thank you for your question.
In reality, everything, everyone and everything is ultimately is completely acceptance. Everything, even maybe somebody who seems to be resisting me, I guess I seem to maybe be in some aspect of acceptance of anything.
I don't know why I like this sentence yet. I don't know. It is, I know. I feel rather bold saying it. But it also feels like there's something there. Yes. Yes, and I think that's kind of where I'm... Yeah. Well, I think this is why I'm liking the sentence, because it's right around this question. Is reality there and I accept it? Or is it acceptance? I don't think I can put words to it very well yet, though. But my acceptance is, of course, part of reality. It's within reality. That's good. That's good. That's why we do Dharma talks, so that we can chew on that for a while. See if it shifts some habits in our mind. It's the whole reason we do these things. Shift the habits of the mind from either blatantly dualistic or subtly dualistic thinking to more sort of intimate, inclusive, interpenetrating. I'm sorry, I can't really answer you very well.
Yeah.
I think we do have a tendency to want to get ground under our feet. So in relation to the virus, for example, like how do I make sure, what do I need to do, and I want to be very sure. So people, I imagine there are many people refreshing their coronavirus page on updates on their computers like really frequently, just to try and get a handle on it, try and pin it down. And there's nothing wrong with doing that to some extent, as long as we also fully accept that we just can't get any ground under our feet. We can't get any certainty about the phenomenal world. We can have certainty that nothing can destroy the present moment. There we can have certainty. Almost everything else, maybe everything else is not certainty. And to be accepting of that. That's your acceptance.